When it comes to hard work, there's one important rule. Pick the right tool for the right job. That's why Chevy offers a family of Silverado pickup trucks designed just for the job. Go to ChevyDriveChicago.com and put a Silverado in your toolbox.
Thank you very much, Lauren. Hey, everyone. Your Money Matters just around the corner on this Tuesday evening. And if you're an Uber driver or a Lyft driver, keep on driving, but keep on listening, because we've got interesting news that could impact how you are classified as a worker or anyone in the gig economy. Some big news today in that front. Megan Financial is going to stop by, too. They specialize in financial planning for people with pensions. So if you've got one of those, why you want to maybe chat with the folks at Megan Financial. And we'll also talk about Americans running out of money. And with the holiday season coming up, that impacts our question of the day, too. It's a rollover from yesterday. We'll get to all that next on WGN. 720 WGN, it's Your Money Matters. Let's get the numbers that matter. The market's pretty mixed today. The Dow up, the other two down. The International Monetary Fund says that the world economy headed towards stormy waters, downgrading the global growth projections for next year. Also going down, water levels all up and down the Mississippi River. Max Armstrong talked to us a little bit about that, but Memphis going down another 2 feet recently, expected to drop 2 feet more this month. How does that impact business? Well, all the barges up and down, it's causing huge traffic jams. Good news in the nonprofit sector, Kellogg awarding Chicago Community United, a nonprofit advancing racial justice, and Lurie's Children's Hospital $10 million to improve mental health and community healing. According to Bankrate, the current average rate for a 30-year fixed is 7.04%. Gas was at least steady today across the country at $3.92 a gallon, and in Illinois at $4.40 a gallon. Those are the numbers that matter here on Your Money Matters on this Tuesday, October 11th, 2022. Got a lot to get to today, but this company kind of raised my eyebrows a little bit at how much money they have raised. And part of it's because I didn't know people did this a lot anymore. Maybe it's because I'm not a kid anymore. Kevin, Lauren, and Mary. Is putt-putt still a thing in your world? Is that still a date thing that people do? Putt-putt, mini golf? Do you see that?
I haven't done it in a long time.
Me neither, but I love it.
You love putt-putt?
My son and his fiance do it once in a while.
Okay.
Or his wife, I'm sorry. They're married now. Oops.
But they go putt-putting?
Yeah, they have. Uh-huh.
Well, Putt Shack is this company, and it's a upscale, tech-infused mini golf experience based in Chicago, has raised about $200 million in funding, and they take the Top Golf approach, and they do it to the putt-putt world. So I'm looking at pictures of this experience, of what they'll open up, and they're hoping to open up more across the country. I think they're based here out of Chicago, but they have a London home right now in terms of where they're open. It's like putt-putt courses, or like picture beer pong, but you use putt-putt to try and get it into the cups. Like, it has a little ramp, and it goes into cups, giant cups. Mm.
See, I like putt-putt because it's like a beautiful summer night thing to do.
Yeah.
You know, if you were golfing during the day, you know, you kind of get your fill there. If you didn't, you can go out at night, and it's a little easier. Yeah, I don't know.
Not lasers, blinking lights.
No. I mean, maybe for kids, but yeah.
Yeah, exactly. They got one, like, looks like a ski ball. So you putt it up there really quickly, and it jumps into different things. But anyways, they raised about $200 million in capital. They founded the company back in 2018. They've got about 150 employees, and they're looking to expand and open 6 locations here in the U.S. and the U.K. So they do have a location. It's at 303 West Erie in Chicago, and one in Oak Brook, too. So there you go. So group outing, guys.
I'm in. Let's do it. Not to plug another company talking about this, but Tiger Woods is getting into the mini putt thing.
Really?
Designed kind of this miniature course that's just putting, and it's like mini golf, but it's Tiger Woods designed, and it's, you know, have more fun. I think there's drinks involved,
yeah,
things like that.
Okay, so people are getting involved in that. Yeah, I don't know.
The Top Golf revolution, I guess. They're trying to get golf, some kind of golf involved where it doesn't take 4.5 hours on a full 18-hole course.
Or maybe people that aren't, you know, really great at golf or aren't, you know, really into it, everyone can putt-putt.
John wouldn't know about that. Have you seen him on the links?
Oh,
right down
maybe,
the pipe every time.
Every
300
time.
Yards.
708 says, we were at the Putt Shack in Oak Brook several months ago for my son's birthday. Had a fantastic time. And then 630 says, Mary, did you not go to their wedding?
Mary's having a senior moment.
It's been
a long day of traffic.
That's okay. Here, I'll give you 20 seconds till we get to that report.
Oh, man.
What state spends the most in holiday spending per household? We did this yesterday. It's a carryover. Kevin called at the end of the show. We couldn't squeeze him in. Kevin, what's your guess?
Texas.
It's not Texas. Texas is actually down at 18. Sorry,
okay.
Kevin. Thanks for calling back, though. 312-917-2200. We'll hope to get an answer before the end of the show. First look at weather and traffic. Mary Vandeveld. Joining us now from Megan Financial is Ron Whittingham. Did I say that right?
I just rolled
over the Whittingham. Whittingham.
You got
right?
It.
There
you
we
got
go. Ron, we were talking during the break. Megan does a lot of work and helps out a lot of people that have pensions, right?
Yeah, so Megan Financial, it's a really unique business. It's really unique because we work with people with pensions. We work a lot of the labor unions, a lot of the firefighters, a lot of the police officers here in Chicago, teachers, whatnot. But, you know, people with pensions aren't very, you know, it's
they're working.
Yeah,
they don't have a lot of time to cozy on up with a financial advisor usually. Here's my question, though. I often hear the number of pensions are going down. So how do you look at that? Is it different here where we are?
Yeah, again, it's really unique nationally, but very prevalent here in Chicago. You know, I would say 5 to 8% of Americans have defined benefit plans.
Right.
Where, you know, that number is much larger here in Chicago.
Right. So you have a big client base here in the Chicagoland area. What is unique about a pension that would require a financial advisor who maybe knows more about that specific thing?
Well, so like a pension, a defined benefit plan, mm-hmm. is a sum of money based upon how many years you have in a trade or in a job, and you get a defined amount of money each month.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, think about that right now with the volatility in the markets. I mean, having a same amount of money, not correlated to the market, in your bank account each and every month.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a pretty good feeling.
That is a great feeling.
Yeah. So when you're investing other money, as a financial advisors do, you can do different things with that money because the participant isn't as reliant on that asset for income today.
So you can tailor a different plan because you know no matter what, they're set until the end.
Yeah, no, and that's it's a great, they can't run out of money.
Right. Is it also that, can you actually help with the allocation of the pension or people realizing all the benefits that actually are available to them? Because I imagine some things get lost in the cracks.
Yeah, so, you know, we end up becoming an advocate for these participants to make sure they get all the benefits they have coming to them.
Mm-hmm.
And as far as allocating, we can't allocate anything with the defined benefit
plan. Right.
That's done by the unions and the trustees and professional money managers. But, you know, all of these clients also have 401k plans, defined contribution plans, and they can be invested a little bit differently because they have these defined benefit plans to rely upon.
Right. So to sum this up, I guess, and correct me if I'm wrong, if you've got a pension, you know what that income's going to be monthly. You, through your union, have negotiated whether you're going to get a COLA raise or 3% or whatever it is.
Yep.
Every year, you kind of know what that is going to be. And because of that, you can what? Is it be more aggressive on the other areas and that can make you more money in the long run? Or it just depends on where you are on that? Like, I mean, what are the specific differences that you can do with someone's 401k knowing that they have a pension as well?
Yeah, you know, the beautiful thing is a lot of these participants and clients of ours, you know, use this money for fun stuff. They use it for vacations. You know, maybe they use it for some sort of planning for their kids or their grandkids or help them out. Instead of having the kids get the money, you know, when they're gone, they can actually get the money and see them enjoy that money.
Mm-hmm.
And as far as allocating, the things we do differently is we can actually, you know, again, we can invest it a little bit differently. They don't need to rely on that money for income in retirement at all.
Are there different tax considerations, too, for someone with a pension as opposed to someone that has a minimum required distribution out of a 401k, perhaps?
Yeah, you know, the taxes are very similar. So, you know, Illinois is unique in the fact that you don't pay state income tax on pensions, Social Security, or 401k distributions.
Yeah, say that quieter because we don't want to give anyone any ideas
in
Springfield. Okay, yeah, right. Remember, that's the one thing in Illinois that we got going for us. But, okay, so that's one thing. I didn't mean to interrupt your thought. Keep going.
No, I mean, I think that's, you know, that's the one thing when what people have to understand is when they're taking a look at what they're going to live on in retirement. You know, a lot of these people, again, they see all this other stuff coming out of their paychecks that they won't out of their retirement checks.
Okay. Do you feel like sometimes union workers, like kind of what we talked about at the top, they work often hard jobs. Some of them, many of them involve physical labor and they're tough work jobs that you have developed a relationship with folks that you're able to, I don't know, explain things in everyday working class terms. I don't know how to say that. Kind of like how we talk here on the show, right?
Yeah, you know, and again, I think that the union folks, they're different because they don't have to do anything to create the pension.
Right. Right.
They don't have to defer money out of their paychecks and put it in the 401k. They actually, it's done for them. So, mm-hmm. but the difference is once they near that retirement age, you know, the unions have a liability, a fiduciary liability, where they can't give advice.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where firms like ours come in and sit there and say, okay, well, yeah, you can do this. This is when you should take that pension because there's no reduction. This is when you should take Social Security. This is, you know, how, if you have a medical benefit in retirement, this is how that integrates with Medicare.
Mm-hmm.
You know, what happens if I die? You know, I mean, you know, what's my wife going to be left with? And it's a huge consideration.
Do you also look at what's going on in the pensions themselves, or do you try and steer clear and trust that they will be good to go as they've been promised, right? I mean, I know that there's always worry that some people have that, what if that pension's not going to be there one day?
Yeah, and that's something you have to plan for. I mean, luckily for a lot of the unions that we work with, these pensions that we're dealing with are fully funded.
100%.
Over fully funded.
Right.
Or even over 100% fully funded. But, you know, some of the different pensions, we won't mention any names.
Right.
You know, if that's a risk, you have to plan for that.
Right. And that's what I mean. I mean, so it kind of depends on who you're talking to. Maybe you do set out a little plan just being like, hey, you know, we've been reading this. This is what the plan says. I think you might be okay, but it's not harmful to look on the side a little bit too.
True. And, you know, and I would tell anybody, even if your pension plan is in great shape, you know, if you're a younger person out there, you know, do something on the side. You know, put a couple $100 away per month in a Roth IRA or something like that, a rainy day fund, because it's just going to give you different options down the road. And, you know, that's freedom.
For sure. I know you guys are a sponsor of the new show we have here Sunday mornings at 8 a.m. I imagine that's a big thing. The workers' mic, that's got to be a proud moment for you guys.
Yeah, no, it really is, because it's, you know, it's everybody. It's all of our clients. It's all of our clients that we've been dealing with. And now they have their own show, the radio show. They have a voice on Sunday mornings at 8 a.m. And we're proud to be part of it.
50,000 watts. Yeah, that's great stuff. Ron, I appreciate it. Where can people go for more information?
So our website is www.megent.com, or they can call us at 708-444-1090.
It's radio, so we say it twice. What was the number again?
708-444-1090.
Oh, and one thing I wanted to ask, do you want people coming to you, I guess at any point, right, whether they're just starting working and starting that plan, or if they are approaching retirement, they haven't talked to anyone yet, or they're in retirement, they can all call out and reach out?
Yes, sir. I mean, the earlier the better, but we can help whenever.
For sure. Ron, it's really great to meet with you. Thanks for joining us, okay?
Thanks, John. Really appreciate it.
Ron Whittingham, investment executive offering securities and advisory services through Cetera Advisors, LLC, member FINRA, SIPC, Megan Financial, 15321 South 94th Avenue, Suite 100, Orland Park, Illinois, 60462.
And it's Your Money Matters. I'm John Hansen. And big news today for those that work in the gig economy, potentially at least, the Labor Department unveiling a proposed rule. We'll break it all down here with Carl Evers Hillstrom, who's a business and lobbying reporter for The Hill. Carl, thanks for joining us this evening.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Okay, so this is a proposed rule that would do what?
So really, what the Biden administration is going for with this rule, they say, is to try to tackle misclassification of workers. So folks who are effectively working as full-time employees, but are not classified as such, but are classified as contractors, so that they are not subject to sort of minimum wage and overtime rules. And so I think, you know, this is trying to reverse kind of what the Trump administration did with their rules, which was to kind of make it easier for companies to hire folks as contractors, and kind of reverse kind of towards what the Obama administration was trying to do towards the end of his term, and you know, get a lot more people as classified as employees so that they can get some more benefits, and so that they're, you know, covered by a lot of these employment rules.
Yeah, so what does the proposed rule say? Does it set like a number? Hey, if employees work this many hours, they are for sure labeled as employees. Is it specific language, or is this just like a press release and then we wait for more action?
Yeah, well, it's that, but it is also 280 pages of complicated rulemaking. So I guess what I will say is, one, it's a draft rule, so the Labor Department said today that they're not even totally sure that this will be what the final rule looks like. They're obviously going to take a lot of comments from businesses and workers. But really what it's going to do is kind of consider factors differently than the Trump administration did. And I would say just generally, without getting too specific, what they're trying to look at is the working relationship and seeing, is the worker truly in business for themselves or for a company, for an employer? And then, you know, once the rule is finalized, then the Labor Department, you know, state regulators, employers, employees, you know, will use that guidance to decide whether, you know, they're an independent contractor or they're an employee.
Could you lay out just some of the differences that these companies have when they label someone like a contractor? Like, what does an Uber or a Lyft driver not get if they're a contractor versus an employee?
Yeah, so certain, you know, there's just a lot of federal regulations, even state regulations about minimum wage, overtime. They're just kind of standard requirements that contractors are not required to receive. It's also a little bit harder if you're an independent contractor to join a union. And the Biden administration has made a big point about that. They're not protected by labor laws quite like full-time employees are. And then generally, contractors also just don't receive as much in terms of any kind of retirement or healthcare benefits. Certainly, employers are able to offer that, but it's just not as commonplace. And for employers, it's there's a lot of benefits. Obviously, you know, you can pay employees more for the time that they're actually working rather than having to sort of salary them. There's not as many tax liabilities. There's not just paperwork. You know, so there are some pretty significant differences. So if this work has really changed that classification, it could have pretty sweeping impacts.
I know that we use Uber and Lyft drivers, gig economy, but this goes beyond this classification, right? I mean, home care, janitorial services, there's a lot of things in this world.
Yeah, you know, the headline is going to be the gig economy. And, you know, we saw Uber and Lyft stock tank today on this announcement. But Biden admin really said that this is not aimed at any particular industry. You know, yeah, like you mentioned, they talked about those industries. They also talked about trucking. They talked about construction, which is a big one. They talked about hotels and restaurants. You know, I think what the Biden admin is saying is that this is not necessarily just a gig economy thing. This is a trend that we're seeing across the economy, that employers are much more interested in hiring contractors nowadays and contracting people out. In some cases, they're saying that, you know, these are kind of blatant misclassifications.
Yeah, and I imagine some employers would counter with that, you know, being a contractor allows people to have flexible schedules, choose their own hours, and that there are benefits to the employees. I can't say that. There's almost benefits to the contractors, too.
Yeah, certainly. I think if you talked to contractors, they would tell you that's the number one thing they would tell you, that the flexibility is the biggest kind of selling point. You know, and what I will say about this is that I don't get the I don't think that this is aimed at sort of someone who's, you know, maybe doing DoorDash a few days a week on the side. You know, this is really aimed at people who are working for one de facto employer, but are continuing to be called contractors. But certainly, I think there are some people who might fall under that umbrella of, you know, they're a contractor who typically works with one company, one employer. But they'd really prefer to keep that status because they like the independence, like you mentioned.
For sure. Carl from The Hill, we appreciate you joining us, okay?
Sure thing. Anytime.
Yeah, that's Carl Evers Hillstrom. All right, let's get a look at weather and traffic. Mary Vandeveld. But I digress. The show is not about fall foliage. This is Your Money Matters here. And yesterday and today, we've been talking about people starting the holiday spending early. And yesterday, we kind of covered the supply chain issues, the idea that some of these big box places had ordered too much, and now they're putting some on sale. Ben Wink, that's probably only half the story. He's the economy reporter at Insider. A lot of these big, they know that our savings are dwindling a little bit, right, Ben?
Exactly. Thanks for having me on, John. It's good to be here. You know, we had this period going into or during the start of lockdown where people weren't going out and spending on in-person things. You know, we weren't going to the restaurants, the movies, and we were getting stimulus that we've just never seen before, right? Mm-hmm. Stimulus checks, enhanced unemployment benefits, and that really helped build that savings buffer. But high inflation has been eating away at that. That financial cushion has been shrinking. And so that's what these companies are seeing, and that's why we're seeing these discounting events start earlier, because they're trying to compete and get those people in the door, because they know we're just not going to be spending like we have in the last few years.
Right. Now, our cumulative excess household savings is still higher than it was from before the pandemic, right?
Yeah, we still have about $2.1 trillion just in total, you know, nationwide household savings compared to where we were at the very start of the health crisis. But that number has been falling, and falling faster than we expected or than we thought just a few months ago. That data was revised lower. So we've gone through about a third of that financial cushion that we built up during the first about year of the pandemic. But inflation is still high. We still have the very spending-heavy holiday season ahead of us. And I think until we start to see price growth cool off, you could see households trying to hold on to that financial cushion, hold on to that savings, instead of dipping into it so much, just because there's such an uncertain time. And if the economy does kind of teeter or fall into a recession next year, you're going to want that financial buffer.
Right. And so, just to put a finer point on it, they want you to spend the money now because they don't know if you will at all spend it in December, right?
I think it's definitely that. It's also, I would argue that, you know, they're starting it earlier so that you can spend a little bit on some holiday gifts right now, then get paid again, go out and spend a bit more. So you can spread it out over some pay periods. But that's definitely, you know, both of those factors are playing a role here. And I'd also add, you know, that as you have Target and Walmart, the in-person stores that, you know, people can go and shop in person again, you know, different from a couple of years ago. But Amazon is also rolling out its Prime deals that started today. And so they're all competing, both the online options and the traditional in-person retailers are all trying to get people in their door first. Just because once you're in there, you're probably going to get, you know, a few things. You're going to do a lot of your shopping there. And so there's a lot of value to be had in being the first one to provide these deals.
Is a savings drawdown a prognosticator of a recession all the time? Or is there something that could potentially combat this that would prevent one from happening?
I think it's an interesting scenario because, yes, sometimes seeing this kind of drawdown could be a precursor for a worse economic backdrop to come. But you look at just how large that buffer was when you add up the stimulus and add up all the spending we didn't do. And we still have about 66% of that financial cushion there. So there is a bit of wiggle room. It's not, you know, we're not sounding the alarm just yet, but I think what's really going to be interesting to watch over the next few months is how much are Americans going to stop spending down their savings? How much are they going to just cut spending altogether? Then how much is inflation going to cool off? Because if we see prices start to stabilize and wage growth continue to climb pretty steadily, then that could really help give households some more solid footing and have them kind of be a bit more confident in their ability to save, but also keep spending on the things they need to spend on.
And I imagine all eyes on the labor market, too, because if people can keep their jobs for the most part, then, you know, they can maybe either rebound up with their savings or at least hold what they have.
Exactly. And that plays such a big role in terms of kind of building that sort of psychological security in terms of, you know, you have the steady income, you have a job. And right now we've seen job openings start to come down, but we still have more than 10 million job openings around the U.S. So Americans are still fairly confident that they can switch jobs. They can go out and find a new job. Unemployment is at 50-year lows, and we're still adding jobs at a pretty healthy pace. So, you know, there is confidence there, and that could be helping a lot of Americans you know, feel a bit more secure in their finances, especially as we get into this spending heavy holiday season. But, you know, as you've seen in the headlines, you know, the Fed has said there might be an uptick in unemployment in order to get inflation lower. There might be some softening in the labor market, is the way they put it. And so that could be, you know, for those households that might lose their jobs or might not see the same wage growth that they've been enjoying for the past few years. I couple that with still high inflation and the fact that their savings are dwindling, and that could put a lot of households in a really sticky situation.
Have there been any projections yet about how much we are expected to spend this year? I know there was a big run-up last year, the kind of the first quote-unquote post-pandemic. Of course, we ended up getting Omicron, and it wasn't that at all. But they expected, you know, big sales in 2021. Have we heard anything about spending this year, or is it still too early to prognosticate?
Yes, there have been some early estimates. The one that I saw from Adobe, it said, you know, we still expect spending to go up by about 5 or 6%. I'm pretty sure that was the estimate they had. So we are growing from where we were last year, and that makes sense, right? You know,
We do have some savings left over. Yes, prices are high, but overall spending tends to increase. It'd be pretty catastrophic if, you know, spending just cratered from where we were last year. But to compare that to last year, you know, we had holiday sales, at least according to Adobe Analytics, holiday spending was up 15% from the year before. And that does take into account, you know, all the people getting vaccinated and, and stimulus still being, still going on. But we're just not going to see that same booming spending spree that we had in 2021.
Ben Wink, thanks for joining us. We appreciate it.
Thanks so much for having me on.
All right. John Landecker's next here on the station. Chris Cuomo's back, of course, on News Nation next. And we got news coming up next from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom.